Thanks, Phyllis. It's gratifying to see a few people I've met over the years within the system. It's also not very gratifying to see their names on that wall behind you. Here we are 30 years later, still fighting what Claire Culhane and others have called the best fight in town. We're still fighting the system on the same issues of human and civil rights within and outside the prison, because we recognize that we are a community, not a separate one. Everyone here today, and all those who will listen to this broadcast later on, should know how policies and legislation affecting prisoners within our systems will also affect them in the future. We are all touched by the criminal justice system in some manner. The criminalization of poverty and addictions are examples of this. Politicians and the privileged have had little incentive to deal with the underlying reasons people turn to crime in order to support themselves, their families, or their addictions. Those people like Larry Campbell, who's the mayor of Vancouver, and others who do attempt to change the way things have been done are vilified by the right wing and the press. A couple of months ago, BC amended the Corrections Act and regulations for the provincial prisons here in British Columbia. What were once entitled inmate rights are now inmate privileges. Prisoners do not have the right to be fed on a regular basis. That is now a privilege. Correction staff are not required to give a lawful order in execution of their duties. Those are now directions. And if a prisoner disobeys those directions, they will face disciplinary sanction. The change in wording makes one wonder how these acts and regulations will carry out in some form to the provincial legislation that govern the rest of our society. The first year I experienced Prisoners' Justice Day was in 1976 at the BC Pen. That was a year of extreme change within the system. During the prior year, the union representing the guards was negotiating with the Treasury Board in Ottawa to give them a salary increase and more money to hire more guards. Their rationale was that they were the caretakers of the dregs and the most dangerous of society. When the board said there was no more money forthcoming, the union directed that their members work to rule. That meant the guards follow the rules to the letter of the law and their union contract and make no exceptions regarding staff to free prisoner ratio. The tactics continued on for several months and escalated as their monetary demands were not met. Prisoners were only let out of their cells in limited numbers to collect their meals or go to recreation. This increased the time spent to feed everyone and decreased the time, which was limited at best, for exercise in the yard. The end result was reflected in riots occurring across Canada and several penitentiaries. It wasn't a coordinated effort on the part of prisoners and their supporters, as some of would have the public believe. Prisoners did not want to be used as pawns in the game between the union and the government. Many complaints were lodged during that time, but none of the concerns that were lodged and raised in those complaints were ever addressed. The reason I bring this up is that several weeks ago, the Solicitor General's Department in Ottawa removed the provision of danger pay for a new contract for administrative staff and institutional parole officers. I don't know how much that involves, however. The new union representing the prison staff is much more radical and may be embarking on a similar path the earlier union went. As of July 25, 2005, a directive was issued at St. Anne-de-Plain SHU in Quebec, suspending all evening activities due to funding shortage. I can only surmise that the CSC is justifying their actions by saying they don't have enough money to hire staff to monitor prisoners for recreation and other activities. This is the same argument the previous union used 30 years ago to justify the need for more guards and or implement increasingly restrictive operational regulations. Medical issues, as you heard earlier, because many people died because of medical neglect within the system and continue to do so. Medical issues are high on the agenda of things that need to be addressed in the prisons. The CSC has had a bad habit of following the United States when it comes to policies regarding prisoners and the treatment of them. One such policy that's made its way up here is forcing prisoners to pay for their own medication if they wanted to practice preventative medicine. As a result of those policies, Contagious viruses such as cold and flu run rampant through the close confines of prisons. Medical treatment and policies have become very restrictive in recent years. This has accounted for the rise in transmission of hepatitis C and in some cases HIV. Recently, China introduced a policy of testing everyone in its prisons for the presence of HIV and hepatitis. China estimates there are 840,000 people in the population who have contracted the diseases, and that number is growing. Here in Canada, several studies by the Canadian HIV Legal AIDS Network, or Legal Network, have found that the incidence of contraction for the viruses for HIV has increased 58% over a 6-year period. That study started in 1996 and ended in 2002. For the period of time, that is approximately 2% of all federal prisoners who are tested were known to be positive. That's not everybody who has volunteered to be tested. A more recent study in 2004 of the Quebec's provincial system found that 2.3% of men and 8.8% of women had the virus, and overall the contraction rate is 10 times higher than that of the general population. In the federal system, those who were tested for hepatitis C comprised 25.2% of the male prisoners in the federal system and 33.7% of the female population. The potential for spread of this virus is much higher than HIV, but poses just as much of a health problem for prisoners and the society when they are released. The public has to be made aware of the health dangers these policies and lack of action for society as a whole. The healthcare system will be further burdened with a large number of people who required specialized medical care in the future unless government is forced to address the medical issues within the prisons. Thank you.
For many years, Claire not only helped organize Prison Justice Day events on the outside, she spent much of her time traveling to prisons across the country, helping any prisoner who asked for her help. Ironically, she was barred from going into BC prisons for many, many, many years. But towards the end of her life, she won that battle too and got back inside the BC prisons. And we have today her daughter, Dara Colhane, and she's going to say a few words.